Billy Horschel has given us some great moments in 2025 on the golf course and in the simulator. The eight-time PGA Tour winner joins us to recap the inaugural TGL season as Hour 2 of Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
It's a special week in Augusta as top amateurs in the game converge on Georgia for a chance at a final round date at Augusta National. This year marks the sixth edition of the Augusta National Women's Amateur coverage, beginning tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time here on Golf Channel. Coming into the Golf Today studios, he's no amateur over here. This guy's a Wiley veteran, Eamon Lynch and Jordan Cornett here rocking along in hour number two. Fun first hour talking with Justin Leonard and an opportunity to talk to Billy Horschel here in the second hour. Should be fun.
Yeah, and Billy's one of those guys. I remember Billy came on our show a couple of years ago and he was very clear that one of his goals was to actually improve his record in major championships, which he wasn't happy with at the time. And he was top eight in two majors last year and came really close to walking away with that claret jug at Royal Troon.
Tell you what, it's hard watching him not thinking, man, would that guy look good up in Bethpage representing America. And that's something I look forward to asking him about.
Oh, he's too much of a wallflower to play that.
We'll find that
out when we talk to him in a moment. But we see amazing shots every week on the PGA Tour, but you won't see many better than this one. In the final round of the Valspar Championship, Billy had a bad lie next to a tree on the par 5 fifth. So he turned around, swung left-handed, and he hit that incredible
shot onto the tree. And he wasn't done yet. That was just getting started.
You're going to hit a shot like that? You got to cash it in. And that's exactly what he did. Made that birdie putt. And on to finish tied fourth for the week at the Valspar.
I mean, and played it totally cool throughout. The celebration here is going to feel a little bit different. He one-upped himself last Tuesday night. South Florida, the match two of the TGL Finals. This was the moment that led Atlanta drive to the inaugural TGL title. Inject that celebration right into my veins. 18-foot birdie putt for Billy Ho, and he delivers once again. I need to see that type of thing on the PGA Tour. You would definitely have to say TGL was a success in year one, punctuated with that moment right there. We welcome in Billy Horschel right now. And Billy, it was fun watching you during the TGL. You're kind of nodding yourself. What a cool celebration. As you reflect back on the TGL season, certainly was a lot of fun to watch. How'd you feel going through it and ultimately winning a championship?
Yeah, I had a blast. I think I talked about it all year. It was something new. It was something added it to the game of golf. I was a big proponent from day one when Mike McCarley reached out to me in early 22 about joining TGL and being part of the league. I just thought, I think the game of golf is the greatest sport in the world. It can open up so many doors. It can create so many connections, create relationships that you never would imagine in your life. And so if there's a way to show golf in a different light, introduce people to the game of golf and show them there's other ways to be a part of it. I'm always for that. And TGL does that. And I think this year was a great year. I think we had a really successful first year. I think there's things we can do better, but I think for a first year, we set a really solid foundation to build upon going forward.
Billy, you've always known for having a passion for team golf, certainly for those of us who were there watching you at Royal County Down in the Walker Cup almost 20 years ago. At this point, so it wasn't a surprise to see you embrace TGL as much as you did. Were you surprised at how much other players seemed to embrace it as the season went on?
Yeah, I think I think everyone was a little nervous at the beginning. You could see that in the matches. You could see that just completely sort of, I would say, out of our arena. We're used to playing outside, outdoors, and we're playing inside in a simulator with people and video boards and music and people yelling at us and people, cheering for us. And you can hear them pull against us and everything. And I think that was something that was so unique. I mean, this is what other athletes and other sports experience. And I think as guys went along, they embraced it a lot. I mean, obviously, JT and I, you knew we were going to embrace it. But I think what people understand is Patrick Cantlay did an unbelievable job. There's a photo that I have that was taken of my celebration when I made the putt and what JT was doing. And Patrick Cantlay's in the background with his arms raised, looking up, screaming and everything. And you could see that, like, he enjoyed it. Now, is he going to do you know, be at our level, JT and I's level? No, but what he did was organic. You saw a side of Patrick where he's really, we knew he's methodical, but just the way he thinks about the hammer and the strategy aspect of it, I think people saw, you know, a little bit more in the Patrick Cantlay and who he is.
Look, Billy, that birdie putt, that monster birdie putt to seal it was incredible. I don't think that was the star of the show in watching that night. I thought it was the family Horschel. I thought it was your daughter demanding that you get the Dirty Bird chain and get it to your teammates. And as a father of three, I'm watching you say, honey, I'm going to get it to him. How much fun was it to watch your daughter, your kids, your wife be on hand and celebrate it in what felt like an incredibly different vibe from any other tournament you win?
Yeah, my little boy, Axel, he's really into golf. So anything golf-related, he was going to be into. But my two girls, you know, they watch a little bit of golf in the sense of they'll come watch me play. But their first match was during President's Day weekend, and they absolutely loved it. We were supposed to leave after the first match because I wasn't playing the second one. We wound up staying because they wanted to stay and experience it more and be a part of it more. So to see my two daughters really being involved, Skylar wasn't able to make it to the match, to the final. She had her some cheer practice that she had to be ready for cheer competition last weekend. But yeah, I mean, to see my kids be into it, you know, those are who we're trying to draw. We're trying to draw on a younger fan base. And, you know, the numbers show that we had the second youngest fan base behind NBA, you know, or, you know, the number of viewers from the 18-49 range was a lot higher than what we have on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, I mean, my family enjoyed it. I think they're a little sad that there's no more TGO for a little while, but yeah, it was nice to experiencing, you know, doing something new and having them be, you know, closer to the action than you would say on a PGA Tour event.
Well, there's always the par three contest next week at Augusta National for the kids as well, Billy. You were here a couple of years ago and you were very open about wanting to improve your record in major championships, said that you thought you'd underperformed versus the rest of your career to that point. And you certainly showed that last year with top eight finishes in a couple of majors, very close at Royal Troon. Why do you think at Augusta is a place that you haven't actually performed to your normal level out there? Is there anything about that course in particular that frustrates you in some way?
I don't think it's anything that has to do with the golf course. I think I understand when I understand a golf course requires precision, a high level of precision, which is what Augusta does, especially with iron shots and placing the ball in the right spot. And if you miss, sometimes you miss in a bad spot and it really, you know, punishes you for that. You know, I just get a little too tight. You know, I try to be too perfect and that's my perfectionism in me. I've got to understand that, you know, I've seen enough guys play Augusta and not be perfect. They don't hit perfect golf shots and they're missing it in the proper spots to be able to, you know, allow themselves to get up and down for par or, you know, avoid a disaster. So I just think, you know, majors have always been, you know, my bugaboo. I think I've done a better job over the last, you know, handful of years. The results may not show it, but I think the way I felt, the way I prepared, you know, the relaxation I've had more in majors, has been a lot better than early in my career. And yes, I would like the results to have showed up sooner, but I think last year showed, you know, the progression I've made over the last handful of years. And hopefully, you know, the how well I played in the majors last year can continue into this year.
Billy, there's something to be said for watching Augusta, being there as a fan and then playing it. And this will be your 10th time doing it. As you speak about the journey through and what it's like playing there. But what is it just like stepping on the grounds there at Augusta, being there playing in that Masters that some of us will just never know what it's like to be inside the ropes there?
Yeah, I've played this my 10th Masters. I missed two in the last 12 or 13 years. And both times I missed them, I've absolutely, you know, it's been awful to watch it on TV and not be able to experience it. And I think missing the two Masters I've had, especially last year, it just gives me more, you know, more gratitude, like to enjoy the experience more. Understand that there is a time limit and how many Masters I'm going to be able to play if I don't win one. And so I'm trying to go this year and enjoy the everything about Augusta, playing on the golf course, you know, trying to hit the quality golf shots, having the fans pull for you, hear the roars, you know, experience with your family and your kids. I mean, my kids are absolutely excited to get back there. So I think, you know, you know, being inside the ropes is very nervous because, you know, it's the one major we go back to year in and year out. Everyone knows the golf shots, and you know the historic aspect of the course and the tournament itself. And I think it just it lends itself to great golf, but also to a pressure of wanting to perform and be a part of history and legacy that the Masters has had for decades.
Well, there's a lot of talk about, I suppose, a reunification or the desire for it in the game these days. And I thought Scottie Scheffler had an interesting reaction a couple of weeks ago when he was asked about it, when he said to the media, well, you guys should go ask the guys who actually divided the game. Therefore, he was kind of implying that the onus just isn't on the PGA Tour alone to resolve this issue. Is that a view you would share?
Yeah, listen, I mean, we've had the PGA Tour, you know, had their own little part in playing it. I mean, both sides, as I said, both sides have had their own hand and you know, this whole situation over the last 3 or 4 years. But I would say on the PGA Tour side, we as players get asked more often about it, about, you know, reunification, the talks, what they want. And I would say, I follow the media for the most part. I would say they don't get asked nearly as much as a lot of us out on the PGA Tour. The questions aren't asked of the players. The questions aren't asked of the executives out there as much as it is on the PGA Tour. So, listen, I mean, as I've said, everyone who's been in the game over the last several years at professional level and the PGA Tour level and live golf, I mean, we've all had a part in you know, the situation that we find ourselves in. But hopefully, you know, there's some resolution here in the future. I know we've all been saying that for the last 18 months, but it is a very difficult thing to figure out, and it's no different than two big companies trying to figure out how to merge together.
Billy, it's kind of reached its summit coming off of TGL, the conversation around looking to the end of September, looking to Bethpage and the Ryder Cup and saying, as an American, that's the kind of guy we want up there. It's going to be a zoo. He's a team guy. He's got the clutch gene. He's got the passion. You've spoken recently with the fearlessness about what you need to go do to be a part of your first ever Ryder Cup team. How much of what you're doing this season is going to be fueled towards being a part of that group?
Listen, I mean, it's obviously been a goal of mine to make a Ryder Cup team. And every year, Ryder Cup, you know, every time we're in a Ryder Cup year, I'm very well aware of, you know, I haven't been part of a Ryder Cup team. And but I can't solely focus on that. I can't have that be the driving force. At the end of the day, I've got to try and, you know, continue to get better as a player, continue to improve as a person. And hopefully through, you know, those gains as improvement that I can, you know, finally make a Ryder Cup team. And listen, I've done a lot of things in my career. I'm very, you know, grateful for and the wins I've had. And, you know, do I feel like I should be on a Ryder Cup team? Yeah. But have I done what I need to in sense of playing consistent golf, especially leading up to the Ryder Cup with, you know, 3, 4, 5 months of consistent golf leading into the Ryder Cup? I haven't done that. And that's sort of been, you know, the Achilles heel a little bit that I just haven't played as well over a period of time as the other 12 guys. So I'm in the best situation that I think I've ever been in my career. You know, at this stage, you know, 6 months out from a Ryder Cup, I think if I can continue to improve and continue to play well and play consistency well, I think, you know, hopefully it lends itself to being part of a Ryder Cup team. And I would love to be a part of that zoo in New York, because I know it is going to be a zoo. It's going to be the craziest Ryder Cup ever. And to be on a team, I've always enjoyed it. I've always, you know, had the mindset, whatever the team needs from me, I'm willing to do. And to be able to get a victory and yeah, hopefully you see me in the red, white, and blue in September in Bethpage.
Well, given that you won the European Tour's flagship event and almost won the Open, those guys would probably take you on their team as well. Billy, I'm not sure you'd necessarily want to play for them. Speaking of this passion that you're well known for, there was a funny story in Golf Weekly recently about the PGA Tour's new media building and the profanity bleeper, which suggested that it gets a little bit of a workout whenever you're on the feed, Billy. Is that accurate? And please mind your language while you're responding to that question.
Listen, I love Adam and who wrote the article, Adam Shupak. I don't know if I said his name right. I don't think I've ever said his name right. And he's a great writer, and I have a great relationship with him. I was, you know, when he asked me, I was, and he sort of said something like, obviously, you're one of the reason why they had the red button. Listen, I've never been fined on the PGA Tour for saying a cuss word. Obviously, it's been caught on air, but at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, there's some times that I get caught, but I don't think I'm the biggest by any means. And, you know, as I said, I understand there's, you know, the cable aspect of not having that language being shown, but you hear in other sports, you know, sometimes through the TV, and I don't think they get reprimanded, you know, like the PGA Tour player does. But listen, am I happy that I, you know, say some words on TV sometimes that aren't, you know, PG? No, but listen, I'm a competitive, you know, you can add the back end of that sentence. And, you know, in the heat of the moment, I'm going to, you know, something that comes up, it's going to be natural. I'm not going to fake it. And listen, I've tried to do a better job. I try to be aware of when there's a mic around, but at the end of the day, you know, if I hit a bad shot and it's in a big moment, you know, a word may come out and I may not be, you know, obviously it's not my fondest moment, but, listen, I'm going to be me. I've always been me. I think people understand that what they see is what they get. And, I think, for the most part, people do appreciate, you know, the authenticity that I bring.
Oh, no doubt, Billy. Count me as one of them. You always let it rip. I can't let you go without saying this. As a college basketball analyst, I spent a lion's share of my work this year covering your Florida Gators. You're a big Gator. Are you going to be locked in Saturday night and then hopefully Monday night? And what's your take on your boys getting ready for a big weekend here?
Yeah, we will be watching in our household. Yeah, we were watching Saturday night up in Nashville at my daughter's cheer event. I didn't think it was looking good for us. And Thomas Houck started the comeback, and Walter Clayton finished it off. But listen, we have, I think, the best team we've ever had at the University of Florida. And that's saying something when we've had two national teams in 06 and 07 with Al Horford, Corey Brewer, Joe Kim Noah, Torian Green, Lee Humphrey. Those guys were impressive. But I think this team, we're a deeper team. We can win in many different ways. We're a deeper shooting team from behind the arc. We have some big guys that can play and move defensively. We get after it. So I think, you know, hopefully we've got two more wins under our belt. And I think if that happens, I think this will be go down as the best basketball team in Florida history.
Wow, I love it. I love it.
Well, Billy, hopefully you'll have two things to celebrate next week when it comes to the win column out there. Always great catching up with you. Look forward to seeing you in Augusta.
Thanks, guys. See you there.
Worth another look. That monster putt. A lot of English on this 18-foot birdie for history. The Atlanta Drive there in South Florida capping off what was an exciting TGL season. The place goes nuts. Billy goes nuts. No expletives there. All the good things. And his family on hand to watch it. Billy Horschel, get him up to Beth Page already. Love to have him on the show. More golf. Welcome back to Golf Today. Fred Ridley, the chairman of the Augusta National Golf Club in the Masters Tournament, announced the creation of the Augusta National Women's Amateur on April 4, 2018. First edition was played in 2019 with Jennifer Kupcho winning the title. This year now marks the sixth playing of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Getting comfortable quick has never been an issue for USC sophomore Bailey Shoemaker. After making the move from Dade City, Florida, a runner-up finish in her Augusta National Women's Amateur debut certainly proves that. And she's hungry for one spot better when she arrives for her second appearance.
I grew up in upstate New York, very, very small town, complete opposite of LA. My graduating class in New York had 50 people. I grew up on 50 acres. I was spoiled with that. I grew up on a four-wheeler, berry picking, fishing, you know, just kind of the ideal redneck kid's life. I absolutely love USC, love my teammates. My entire team is from LA, big country music fan. They are not. I'll make references and they'll be like, what? They won't quite get that, but you know, I'm being cultured by them, culturing them a little bit. The first time I played at Augusta National Women's Amateur in 2022, I had like the perfect middle seat. and I could see perfectly out the front of the van, and it was so surreal. You literally get goosebumps. I feel like any golfer, period, just seeing it for the first time, you just get goosebumps. There's nothing that can't make it incredible. It's just the best week in women's golf.
Some notes on the field for this week's Augusta National Women's Amateur. 72 players in the field, 32 Americans, 40 international players, 23 countries or territories represented, and three past champions in the field. Lottie Wode, Anna Davis, Tsubasa Kajitani. 32 U.S. colleges and universities represented as well. Representing right now on Golf Today, Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols joins us now from Champions Retreat Golf Club. And Beth Ann, let's get right to it. As you look at the field this week, give me a clear favorite in your mind.
Well, I don't think there's a Rose Zhang in this field, Rose Zhang-like character. In fact, to illustrate that point, there's actually two number one players in the field, and they both happen to play for Florida State. Defending champ Lottie Wode, of course, is number one in the world amateur golf ranking, but she's not number one on her team. That's actually Mirabel Ting, who's number one in the collegiate rankings. Mirabel is playing some phenomenal golf right now. She's won 5 of 6 stroke play events this season. And her putting is just, as Coach Amy Bond said, has gone to another level. It's out of this world. She's long been one of the premier ball strikers in college golf, and now she has that second part of her game to match. And, of course, Lottie Wode's been playing some incredibly consistent golf. She hasn't finished outside the top three in college golf in well over a year, had a fantastic calendar year since winning the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Of course, she finished in the top 10 at the AIG Women's Open, had a lot of great experience playing in LPGA majors last year. So, you know, there's not even one clear number one in the field. So it's a really deep field this week.
Beth Ann, one of the names is quite familiar over the years at the Augusta National Women's Amateur is Rachel Heck, although she hasn't actually played much at all, almost since last year's tournament. You caught up with her recently. What's she been doing?
I think everyone in this field and beyond is fascinated by what Rachel Heck has been doing. You know, she went out, she got a real job at a private equity firm in San Francisco. She works her day job as an analyst, but then she also is part of the Air Force Reserve, and she spent 10 weeks prior to this championship at learning how to be a public affairs officer for the Air Force. So, you know, I used to think that a lot of kids would come to love the LPGA and get into golf because of Rachel Heck. And now I can't help but think how many kids will join the military because of the bubbly Rachel Heck, that they'll look at her and think, wow, if she can do this, so can I. You know, I can't think of a better ambassador for the game and for our military than Rachel.
What an impact in both facets. Beth Ann, you followed the young career of 16-year-old asterisk. I always got to stick the landing on the K. Tally, she's making her second straight appearance after finishing T8 in 2024. How impressed are you with what she's been able to do early in her career?
You know, she's only 16 years old, and I think she's definitely one of the most talented players in the field. You feel like Asterisk is on the cusp of winning a really big title, and this could be it. You know, she's a fearless player. She plays well beyond her years. She obviously was a finalist at the U.S. Women's Amateur and the U.S. Girls Junior this past year, won a USGA title at the Women's Amateur Four Ball. So, you know, she's been right there in some really big moments. You know, she's dominating junior golf right now. But when she plays up a level on a bigger stage, even at a place like the U.S. Women's Open, you know, she's right there. And she carries herself, you know, with such a calm, focused demeanor. I was talking to Annika Sorenstam earlier this year about Asterisk. Of course, Asterisk won her AJGA junior event, which got her into the amateur portion of the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. And Annika was really impressed by how focused Asterisk is. You know, she's mature beyond her years inside the ropes, that's for sure.
You just published an interesting story on Golf Week, Beth Ann, about a pretty cool player-caddy combination that's out there at the Augusta National Women's Amateur this week. Tell us about it.
Scarlett Schremmer. You know, I think this is such a fun story, a fun player to follow. Scarlett's mother is Patricia Earhart, who actually played a lot of mini tour golf and got her card, played one full season on the LPGA before giving birth to three daughters who are all actually became really, really impressive world-class surfers living in Hawaii. Scarlett actually won three national championships as a shortboard surfer. Her sister Mason is one of the top 10 longboard surfers in the world right now. And Scarlett decided around the age of 14 that she really wanted to start taking golf seriously and got inspired by caddying for her mom, who got her amateur status back in so many USGA championships. So the roles are reversed this week. A mom will be on the bag. Scarlett's only 18 years old. She just graduated from high school earlier, just a few weeks ago in March, and is going to go to Texas A&M. Just has nothing but golf on her mind right now. And as someone who's used to battling for the waves against her fellow surfing competitors, and she actually told me that there were times that she worried about drowning as a 9-year-old catching those extremely big waves on the North Shore of Hawaii, that she's used to this kind of a stage in a way that few can be. So I expect her to have a fun week alongside her mom. And there's only been one mother-daughter in LPGA history to both qualify for the tour, and that was Myra Blackwelder and her daughter Mallory. So keep an eye out for Scarlett. They could become the second mother-daughter duo to make history.
There really are so many wonderful storylines playing out this week at Augusta National and Champions Retreat. Beth Ann, always a pleasure to catch up, and we look forward to catching with you again tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Well, here's how you can watch coverage of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Round one starts Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. Same again Thursday. And then Saturday, the final round at Augusta National at noon Eastern. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, Nelly Korda here.
Hey, it's Allison Corpus.
Hey everyone, Megan Kank here.
Ashley Buon, just want to wish you all the best of luck at the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Best of luck in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's such a special tournament at a special place. Enjoy it. It's just going to be one of a kind.
Good luck to the girls competing at the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Good luck at the Augusta National Women's Amateur this week.
I'm so jealous that you guys get to play in this special event. So enjoy, have fun, and most importantly, good luck.
Always nice to see the best in the women's game recognizing the amateurs competing in Augusta this week. And a reminder that first-round coverage of the Augusta National Women's Amateur begins tomorrow, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. Now, one of the great pictures to get to post on social media is with the invite to the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Here's 20-year-old Catherine Rao. She's making her debut this week. She's a junior at Princeton, and with more, we send it out to Champions Retreat and Steve Burkowski.
Eamon, Catherine, good enough to join us on this Tuesday. And she just told me they took a lot of photos there to get that one right.
Why would you tell everyone that?
Well, because it's live TV. We go with the flow, okay. Catherine. But the good thing is you got the right photo up there. What did it mean to receive the invitation as you're going to be playing in this event for the very first time?
I mean, it means everything. I think ever since I heard about this event, it's been a goal of mine to come. And, you know, I kind of knew I was getting it, but still nothing really matched the excitement of actually receiving it on my front door. I remember I was driving and I get a call from my mom and she was like, there's a package for you at the front door. And I was like, oh my gosh, don't break the speed limit, drive. And it was just super exciting. Like, my whole family was super excited, FaceTimed my friends right away, and it was just really incredible, and it's even better to be here, so.
How would you describe the experience so far this week?
I mean, I don't think I've ever gotten treatment like this in my life. It's a wonderfully run tournament, and obviously we're playing at a really historic venue and making waves in women's golf, so it's just really great to be a part of, and I'm really proud to be here.
Stand out of the state of California, three-time junior All-America selection, but you chose Princeton. You could have gone virtually anywhere in the country. Why was an Ivy League school the path for you?
I think for me, it was really important to get a good degree and study something that I was interested in. And so Princeton had this one major that I found particularly interesting, and there wasn't really any other program like it in the country. And I didn't know when I was younger if I wanted to play professional golf or if I wanted to get a job. And so I wanted to have good backup plans for both. And Princeton was the place to be for that.
And what is that major that piqued your interest?
It's operations research and financial engineering.
Tell us more. Give us in-depth for non-Ivy Leaguers.
Okay. It's basically like econ, but with a lot more computer science and math. I think that's the best way I can describe it. So it's a lot of writing algorithms, optimizing things, and playing with money markets and figuring out, you know, what to do when the time comes up.
How do you balance that academic criteria that you have to contend with at Princeton and be a standout for the golf team as well?
I think it's really important to have good friends. I don't think I would be able to do it without my friends at Princeton who help send me notes and send me help me with my homework and stuff when I'm gone, and also just, you know, prioritizing the right things. Like, I get my schoolwork done and then I go golf and then, you know, I do the social life things.
The student athlete landscape has certainly changed all across college sports. NIL, the transfer portal. How much have you thought about that, and why do you continue to remain at Princeton?
It's been on my mind for sure. I would be lying if I said it wasn't, just because you see it so often on social media. But for me, it never felt right leaving Princeton. I think there's a lot of valuable lessons for me to learn there. And I think that, like, if I can help change the program even just a little bit and help people see that, like, yeah, Princeton is a competitive golf school, I want to be a part of that. I don't want to just be like another good player. Like, I want to do something else for the future of golf.
And how does a week like this just add to that foundation being built there?
I think it's really amazing. Apparently I'm the first Ivy League player to be here, which is really cool. And also it just shows, like, you can do everything that you see everyone else doing, like, who go to the Power Five schools, and like, that is possible coming out in a Ivy League school. And like, for kids who want to go to an Ivy League and don't think they can play golf, I hope they see this and be like, yeah, I can do everything.
What are the expectations for you this week?
Have fun. Enjoy the experience. Soak it all in. Inspire some people. Win.
Wow, just suddenly put win in at the end. Do you believe you can win?
Yes. I don't think I would be playing at this level if I didn't show up to tournaments and think that I can win. I mean, obviously, the field is incredible, and like, I know it's going to be really hard, but I do believe that, like, I'm playing really good golf right now. And if I do what I'm supposed to let myself perform, then, like, it's going to be a good week.
And you're healthy?
Yes, I
finally
am healthy. Yes,
do we even want to go into the background of the shoulder and labrum tear? Let's give the folks at home. You were out for 9 months, a year and a half ago. You're staying off the scooters these days?
Yeah, I don't go on scooters anymore. I'm done with the scooters. It's a good thing the school banned them. We'll put it that way.
How rigorous, though, was the rehab? I know we talked at Southern Hills in the U.S. Women's Amateur last summer that it was almost a year away from the game where you had some question marks.
Yeah, it was definitely really tough. Surgery was an option, but they said that it wasn't guaranteed that it would improve. And so for me, it didn't make sense to get surgery. And I think for the first couple of months, it was really hard to not pick up a golf club, like, especially when it's sunny and it's 76 degrees outside. But I just had to stick to, like, the PT schedule, do the work, put in the work. And, you know, I knew it was better for the long run if I didn't push it.
Feeling good, though?
Yeah, feeling really good.
Catherine, always good to catch up. All the best this week.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Guys, let's go back to you.
Catherine Berko, great stuff there. And how cool is this? Niall Horan sending his well wishes for the competitors in the field this week. Big fan of the game. He says best of luck to everyone competing at the Augusta National Women's Amateur this week. Incredible to see the tournament grow year on year and become a staple in the women's amateur schedule. Cannot wait to watch. Love to see it. Of One Direction fame, for those wondering. This guy knows a thing or two about Augusta National. 2015 Masters champ Jordan Spieth in the field this week in San Antonio. One more start before he continues his pursuit of another green jacket. More golf today after this.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Rolling along on golf today, final round of the 21 Valero Texas Open. It was Jordan Spieth who shot a 6-under-66 to take home the title, his 12th career PGA Tour victory. The win, and it is 82-event winless drought on tour. So special memory, obviously, for Jordan. Now let's take a look at what namesake has done this year. A look at the Pro-Am T69, but Phoenix Open started to turn things around post that wrist injury at T4, missed the cut at Genesis, Cognizant T9. Then it kind of got a little wonky. Players was an up and down roller coaster, finishing 59th, and then Valspar T28. So we get set for the Masters next week. We can't help but remember what Jordan did in 2015, becoming the second youngest player to win the Masters, a four-stroke victory over Phil Mickelson and Justin Rose. He's only 21 years old. Spieth finished 18 under at 270 and tied Tiger's 97 record for the lowest score in tournament history. Here's a look at his record at Augusta. 11 starts, 6 top fives, 9 made cuts, scoring average of a tick below 71. In terms of play, they don't get more polarizing. When he's good, he's as good as anybody. But when it's a roller coaster, it is like driving past a car accident you cannot take your eyes away from. What do you make of who Jordan Spieth is right now?
I think that's what makes him the most engaging guy to actually follow from a broadcast perspective out there. And it was very hard for him to ever maintain the bar that he set in his first 3 years at Augusta National.
It's electric.
It was T2, first T2. That's not a standard anybody's going to keep. But he's come pretty close. He's been third a couple of times. He's been fourth as well. He's one of those guys who seems to find the elixir for his game when he drives down Magnolia Lane. You even see that from some of the old guys out there. But he's a guy who finds his comfort zone on that golf course. But it's going to be interesting to see if he does it this year, because he is coming back, obviously, from the surgery layoff that he had last year. He still hasn't really found his smooth spot. If you look at all of his statistical profiles, it's all very kind of middle of the pack. Nothing's particularly outstanding. And there's always been some part of Jordan Spieth's game that was outstanding at any one point in time. You do see wild fluctuations over the years in looking at his shot length statistics. You know, he would go from, he was off the tee as high as 15th mm-hmm. on tour and as low as 135th just in the last few years. He's been single digits in his rank around the greens, and he's been well outside the top 100 in around the greens as well. So you never quite know what you're going to get with Jordan Spieth out there. I think he's still just simply trying to find his range as he works his way back from that surgery.
I mean, this guy can make birdie from some of the craziest places on a golf course, and then he'll follow it up with a bogey or a double. That roller coaster makes it hard to pick him with confidence going into, let alone Valero, but obviously the bigger focus, Augusta. Looking at his approach in San Antonio, what would be a good week? What would you want to see from him? Making a cut as he goes to Augusta? How does a guy like that use a week like this, I guess, is the question.
I don't know that it's necessarily dependent upon the result that he puts together at the Valero Texas Open. My guess is Jordan Spieth's going there with certain things that he wants to work on in his game and in his swing, that he's searching for comfort. And it's not necessarily going to be reflected in where he finishes on their leaderboard or the score that he posts on a given day. I think a lot of guys who are in the field this week are result-oriented because they need to play their way into Augusta National next week. I think Jordan Spieth's mind is probably already on Augusta National, even though he does like to certainly play in his home state of Texas. But I suspect he's looking for the kind of comfort factor that other guys are out there searching for on the range at home to get ready for next week.
Well, without question, as we talk about, it's a two-horse race. Feels like going into Augusta with Scotty and Rory. Man, if you could get a Jordan Spieth on that leaderboard, that would be electric. It'd be great for the sport. And what a fun weekend of watching that could potentially be if we get that type of Jordan Spieth.
Well, that's the great mystery of Jordan Spieth. You never quite know
what you're going
to get.
But it's really boom or bust.
You know, last year, we saw the emergence of another guy who's very much in that Jordan Spieth vein in terms of the young phenom. This is Ludvig Åberg winning the Genesis Invitation, which was, of course, moved to Torrey Pines from Riviera earlier this year. That was his second victory on the PGA Tour. Certainly one of the rising stars in this game. He did miss the cut at the Players more recently, though, was just outside the top 20 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational as well. But he goes to Augusta National on a pretty positive note, certainly in terms of his vibes at that end of Magnolia Lane. He played his first ever major championship there last year, finished second. These are his 2025 PGA Tour results. Started off pretty solidly, top five of the century. A little bit of hit and miss weeks here and there, but of course that win being the standout. And Ludvig is out on the range at TPC San Antonio, getting himself ready for this week and next.
Looks like the perfectly constructed golfer, watching him out there on the range, the swing, the tempo, the length, the athleticism. Look, I believe he might have the third shortest odds after you move from Scotty and Rory. And watching a guy like Ludvig and understanding that this was his arrival moment, and that what he put together in those Masters, just a couple shots that, quite frankly, were some unlucky bounces, and maybe he's winning that green jacket with how he was playing that first go-round in his first appearance at the Masters. I think now that it's slowed down for him coming into Augusta, he's played some good golf. It was a little bit of a confounding miscut recently. But I look at it and say, if there's going to be a third guy, it's got to be Oberg to me.
He's definitely, you'd think, a guy you'd expect to see by the weekend at Augusta National. But there are a couple of mildly concerning things, I guess, with Ludvig. You know, he's just inside the top 100 in strokes gained approach on tour at 99th this season. He's 142nd around the greens, and he's 98th on the greens. And those are the three areas that are perhaps tested more at Augusta National than at any other major championship. You hear a lot of the players talk about how it is a second shot golf course. And, you know, we heard Rory McIlroy on yesterday's show talk about how it really does test the short game at Augusta National. So you really need that to be unsung. It's very possible you'd see Ludvig do exactly what he did last year and put himself right in the mix. He is a remarkably calm presence. I would be more surprised if he wasn't in the mix.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, right? With him, I mean, the temperament is flatlined. I mean, he's not going to get too high. You know, you hear guys like John Wood talk about the most difficult hole is hole one at Augusta, because it all's coming at you so fast that's the most underrated hole. And for a guy like Ludvig, who's so even keel, I mean, the suite is always relaxed. I expect him to step out there and let it rip. I'm excited to watch Ludvig out there next week.
Well, another guy getting ready for next week and this week, Max Homa on the putting green. He's struggling a little bit, down to 78th in the world right now, looking for that old dose of magic. We'll be right back.